I've been here quite often, also because I've had some study here. And I'm very proud to say that less than a year ago, I climbed Ben Nevis. How many of you have done it?
Yeah.
Okay, I did it. But I disappeared up in the cloud. The weather was not too good. So when I was finally up there, I didn't see very much, unfortunately. But on the way, I did. I am going to talk about partnerships, and this is something that I've been working on quite a lot. So when we get up the whole thing, then it will be interesting to see how I can... Here we are. Okay, good. I have called my presentation Partnerships in Support of Teacher Education. And I think we have to be careful that partnerships... or partnership does not become a buzzword. We have had too many of them in teacher education. Reflection, reflective practice, etc., etc. We are using these concepts without really analyzing and understanding and discussing what it means. So that is what I will discuss a bit today. But first of all, to tell you, because my new position from January 1st is not in Bergen, but in Trondheim. So this is the first building of the University of Technology and Science in Trondheim. And this is a beautiful autumn picture from there. Like here, the river running across the town. I don't think we have too many days like that, but it's a nice picture. So that is where I spend much of my working time now. I wanted to start this discussion on partnership and open this conference with a quote from a famous person. And I think that if we stand together, we are stronger. If we stand alone, we would be weaker. And I think it's about time that also we in the academy start to realize this. We are so busy, our ego is so high, that I think that maybe we have to look for partnerships. And the reason why I used this picture to start with was that one of the complaints of teacher education throughout the world is that it is fragmented. You have here the discipline itself, with the professors in the discipline. They are involved in teacher education. You have those who are teaching the methodology of teaching the discipline. You have those who are teaching general education, or what we call the pedagogy of teacher education. And then you have the practice field. And the students very often complain and say that these are fragmented. They don't speak together sufficiently. And we have to pull them together in order for the students sitting here, you are going to be one teacher. And you need all these... competences, skills, and all this knowledge that comes from the various partners. But before we go on, I would like to define very clearly what we mean by partnerships. And where do we go these days? First of all, to Wikipedia. Okay? And something that there, I think it is important because we agree to cooperate, so you can't force partnership on anybody. It's an agreement. And we have mutual interests. I want to go on, and then I looked at Merriam-Webster, and here they say it's close cooperation, having specified and joint rights and responsibilities. And these are specified. Important things to take with us when we establish partnerships. To go on, it's a relationship that is characterized by mutual cooperation and responsibility for the achievement of a specified goal. We have a shared goal in order to do that. And the conditions are there has to be trust and openness towards the other. Is that always easy? We have to work as a team. For consensus and consultation. for consensus and a consultation. We have to respect the organizational mission of each partner. So we have many partners probably, I'll talk about that, but they have different organizational missions. The expectations and the limits of each partner to share power, but also risks and responsibilities. We have to share the power. It's not only our power at the university. We have to share it. We have to know how to share that power. And to encourage commitment and permanency from the stakeholders. Commitment. That means when you become a partner with somebody, you commit yourself. Okay? I have committed myself to my partner. So that's it. We commit ourselves. I think these are things that are important to take with us. When I'm talking about partnerships supporting teacher education, then I think we have many partnerships. So when I planned this keynote and I looked at the program later on, I see that many of you will go into depth. You're talking about various kinds of partnerships, etc. So what I decided was to give an overview of the kind of partnerships that I think we need to create, to establish, to strengthen in teacher education. So here I'm just giving you an overview, and that will also be the structure of my presentation. I will discuss partnerships with students in teacher education, with you. And keep in mind the conditions for partnerships that we had. I will discuss with policymakers, other national higher education institutions, international teacher educators and institutions. Hanley, you talked about that, globalization. The teaching profession, the practice field, may be our main partners. And then I will end up talking a bit about maybe we have an implicit partnership with society, which we have to take that responsibility more clearly and develop that dialogue. So I will touch upon each of these in my in the following. And you will see that this will be at the top of the slide, so you see, so you can follow me and see where I am, okay? I'm an old teacher, so didactics of it. So, then the first one, and I think that these are maybe key partners in what we are doing, and that is the students of teacher education. And what would happen if we treated a student as someone whose opinion really mattered? Whose opinion really mattered. Fulham said that. We are getting their opinion. Here in Scotland you have, like in many other places, you have the student feedback questionnaire every year. I know it. I had a son studying, as I said, in Edinburgh, in Sion. And he said, so what happens to these questionnaires? What do they do with our feedback? How do they act on it? That was one of the questions that he as a student asked. And it's the same in our university, either it's Bergen or in Trondheim. They fill in these questionnaires, but they don't see that anything is happening with what they are saying. Or, late Jean Rudder, she said, if we look for an alternative approach to school improvement, through listening to and acting on what students have to say about learning in schools. And she talked about children here, but there's no reason why it doesn't apply to us. Maybe even more, because we are working with adult people in our work. And if I look at Ruth Leeds from Queen's University in Belfast, she had a very good paper in 2007 where she also talked about involving young children in elementary school. This paper is about young children in elementary school. But she said then that students must be given space. That means that in our education, we have to make sure that we give students space to become our partners. Do we do that, or do we come in with everything pre-decided ahead of time? We know how it's going to be done. That's one question. And they also have to be given a voice. That means that maybe they don't know how to express, how to explain exactly what they want. Maybe we have to make certain that they are given a voice in this partnership that we want to create with them. And an audience, do we listen to them? Which I think is an important thing. Who listens to them? Who are looking at these questionnaires? We are giving them space in questionnaires, okay? It's a distant space, it's not open face to face, it's a distant space, so we are safe there. But is that what we want? But who reads this? Who's the audience? And then the final, does it have an impact? Okay? In one of the institutions where I worked as the head of teacher education, then we had also the students evaluated the courses. Not only the overall relationship, but the individual courses that they took. Very often we got feedback that some of the courses were not good enough. And then, if the person, the lecturer, etc., had tenure, etc., what do you do about it? What do you do about it? But did we call in? If we can talk to a professor, even though he or she has said tenure, we can do something, we can act upon it, we can do something with the quality of teaching, even with the individual person, but we didn't really use the input we got from students in improving the teaching in it. And an overall perspective, yes, but we did it much less when we talked about individual lecturers and individual courses. I don't know if it rings a bell in other places, but probably it might do. So, what will happen if we took them more into consideration? I think that, first of all, we have to listen to their opinion in a systematic way. But we also have to act on it. And not just to leave it and say, okay, we have done it in a systematic way, we have it. We have talks with students, we have the questionnaires, etc., etc. It's done. Do we act on it? We have to involve students as partners in research. And when we are talking about, and I think that is something that we are talking about quite a lot, involving students in research. But the question is, are they becoming assistants in our research project? Or are we, when they are out in practice, maybe that we become partners in their research projects? That we also look at that way. I think we have to go much more into self and peer assessment as an integrated part of the instructional encounter. The meeting between the learning and the teaching, and to involve peer and self-assessment. All these people, if we are talking about sustainable assessment, learning for life, being capable of assessing your own work and assessing the work of others is essential. It's at the heart there. It's at the core. Here in Scotland, you are talking about assessment is learning. You have even moved beyond assessment as learning, is for learning, and you have even started to move away with the preposition, to do away with them. Assessment is learning. How can assessment be learning if the students are assessed by a big final test at the end? Is that what you want? So, I'm talking about that. Students teaching students, given them more responsibilities on the teaching, and maybe to revisit the curriculum that we are doing. And now I'm talking very much out of Norwegian perspective, and I don't know if it rings a bell with you guys in your various countries, but I've talked a bit about that. In Norway, very much in teacher education, we have a theory-practice approach. That means that they come and they get some theory at the institution before they move into the practice, And so it's how to apply the theory in practice. I am suggesting a different approach. And I'm suggesting, and this is based on feedback from the students, because they don't see the breaks between theory and practice very often. They don't see the relationship. And by starting from the students' own practice experiences as learners in school, and maybe in the beginning of their teacher education, first of all, send them out to school. Send them out to school for a long period of time, not only a week or two to observe, for half a year, and then they come into university only one day a week. At the university, later on then they get the theory. And here they get the theory with a big T, with a big T, okay? I'm talking about episteme here. So here they get the theory with a big T. So they have the practice, they have the theory. That means that here, where they are moving here, the teacher educators have to talk and present theory relevant to their practical experiences. And not the theory that we have planned, pre-decided that is important for them. There's a shift in thinking. Because what I want them to do then is that the next time they go into practice, I want them to have a reflective practice. And reflective practice you can only have if you have a solid foundation of theory. But that theory is absolutely irrelevant to them if you just start talking about that when they come to university. They have to link it to something. And then the aim of teacher education is that I would like the graduates to work as teachers having a personal practice theory. Their own theory. I'm not interested in having teachers who can quote Piaget or Vygotsky or whatever. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in teachers who finish my teacher education who can then talk about their own practice and explaining why they are doing what by seeking support in the theory. That is what I'm interested in. So they become eclectic and they can support their actions in theory. This is a model that I've created after having talked to students, being the head of teacher education in many institutions, that you get a lot of criticism. What can we do about it? So this becomes an output of our own dialogue and partnerships with the students in this. However, it is difficult for us teacher educators. We have to take risks. We have to be open in a different way. Because you need a very high level of theoretical and practical knowledge. It is easier for us to sit over the weekend, many of us do, and prepare our lectures for tomorrow, for Monday or Tuesday for the next week. And we sit there with our books and with our notes and with our research and prepare our lectures, and we come in and give it. You can't do that. Because you don't know what cases the students will bring in. You have to act upon the cases that they are bringing into your teacher education. So this becomes less relevant. Your theory and your own practical understanding of the theory, it has to sit here. It has to sit here. Then you have to have informed, spontaneous teaching, using students' practical cases to introduce the theory. This is what we call the teachable moments. Adaptive teaching. Exploiting moments of contingency. Responsive teaching. We have plenty of words in the educational literature calling this. You have to have flexible reading lists. That means that we very often prepare our own reading list ahead of time. However, if you use this practice theory model that I just talked about, you will need to have a different kind of reading list, because the reading lists are being created together with the students. I'm looking at you. They're being created together with the students during the course. It's a different approach. But that is more partnership than what we have today. In my own settings. I have no idea about your settings, okay? I'm talking about my own. And this is all about teacher educators professionalism. And tomorrow we will talk more about it, but the International Forum for Teacher Educator Development, which we are in the process of establishing and so on, that is exactly what we're talking about. You'll find it on the net and website, and tomorrow we will talk about it. Then we're moving on to policymakers and the partnerships with policymakers. Yeah, I'm afraid I don't have very much to say, because I have a lot of questions. Are we really partners? Do we have shared responsibilities and risks? Do we respect each other's expertise? Do we need each other? Do we pursue the same goal? I think these are questions that we have to ask in relation to our partnership with policymakers. To some of the questions, I have clear answers. To others, I don't have. But I think to the last question, that's the easiest. Because I do think we pursue the same goal. And I'm naive, and I want to continue to be naive and believe that policymakers want to improve the education in their countries. If I give up believing that, then I think my belief in democracy is lost. Okay? So I genuinely believe that everybody who's sitting there, the Minister of Education or wherever they are sitting, they have a goal, and that is to improve education. What do you mean by good education? That's another problem. I'm not quite sure I always agree with that. But to improve education, yes. So we share the goal. Do we need each other? Yeah. We can't without them, and they can't do without us. So maybe we hate each other, but and we love each other, but we need each other. That's for sure. We have to work together. Do you respect each other's expertise? Yeah, I don't have a clear answer. Do I respect any Minister of Education? So I'm not pointing at anybody, okay? In any country, not in my own, and in no other country. But it's difficult for me to respect the Minister of Education, who is making the decisions on education and on teacher education. And all his experience with education, maybe 12 or 13 years in school, and maybe another 3 or 4 years at the university. Not necessarily in education, but he or she has become the Minister of Education because he or she is a good politician. So, and they're the final decision makers. They're the final decision maker. They have helpers and supporters and etc. So they have a lot of help, but they're the final. Do they respect my expertise at the university? Do they respect the expertise that we have as teacher educators and as we have as researchers? It depends on if the research fits their political agenda. Then they respect it. If our research doesn't, and our opinions doesn't, then they don't respect it. So we have a problem here, I think, to become good partners. I don't think I want to put the ring on very soon. Do we have shared responsibilities? Yes, I do. We both have shared responsibilities, but we certainly don't have the same rights. We don't have the same rights. I don't know, in my country at least, I'm not a decision maker. there's a framework for teacher education I have to address. I have a Norwegian colleague of mine here, sitting here, and she's familiar with it. For example, one of the examples that was decided was that they separated teacher education for primary school from 1st to 7th grade, and then from 5th to 10th grade. And these two education, they are completely, that means they are segmented, not segmented, but they are separate. What do I mean by the fact that they are separate? They don't even have one shared course, two completely different programs. They don't have, but isn't the same being a teacher? Isn't it something that all of us have to know, being a teacher? Can't we study that together and then decide later on if we want to go for younger children or older children? No, they have decided from above that you have decided when you are 18, 19 years old that you will be a teacher of the younger children or the older children. And you can't switch in the middle. You can't switch in the middle. That's a difficult, which I think is an example of that we certainly don't have the same rights, because in teacher education we would like to see it differently. And then the last one, are we really partners with policymakers? No, I don't think we are. However, I have, though, a question. Is it different in this country here? Because I have got the impression that the Teaching Council Scotland, together with researchers and together with policymakers, you have a very good dialogue. I don't know if I'm wrong, but with the Scottish colleagues, that is the impression I got. And I've been attending quite a few international conferences on assessment, and there you can always see each partner is represented. You have one from the Teaching Council, you have one from the policymakers, and you have researchers. They always come in threes. So maybe you have come further here than we had in Norway or in other countries. Then I'm talking about other national higher education institutions. That means in your opportunities. Here I think we have lots of opportunities and they are not fully exploited. We are often competitors and not partners, because we are going for the students and we are competitors of getting the students, we are competitors in getting grants, we are competitors in publications, etc. We are competitors. However, should we all have the same expertise? Or can we create partnerships because we have complementary expertise? One institution is very good at, for example, sports education, where another institution is better in science education. And could we combine our expertise here and be partners so the students can enjoy them both? Joint research projects, I think, become more and more important. And in Norway, we are not capable of getting a grant in Norway if you don't cooperate with other institutions. One institution by itself will not get the grant anymore. I think that is very difficult. Joint professional learning activities. That means, can we not only have professional learning activities for our own faculty and staff, but could we do it across the borders, across the institutions? Sharing teaching staff, sharing student joint degrees, is that possible? I think that you have examples of it, and I think we should go for that. And maybe one of the most important things is one voice in dialogue with policymakers, that we are not talking in different voices. But we as teacher educators within a specific context in a specific country, we have one voice in terms of doing it. And I'll come back to that a bit, moving into how we started with the National Doctoral School in Teacher Education. But here, for example, we are in Norway is a very long country, okay? And widespread. We are not many people in it. We are the same numbers you have, approximately 5 million. You are 4.5, something like that. You are 5 as well, so we are the same, more or less, okay? And our teacher education institutions are spread out. The government would like, we have 30 teacher education institutions, and the government, the previous one and the current one, they would like to have less institutions. One of the responses nearly 10 years ago, to their suggestion proposal by the government then, which didn't go through, was that universities and university colleges within an area, they formed partnerships. And we developed one in the west of Norway. We have 5 institutions involved there in that partnership. And we have joint research projects. We are developing joint programs and improving the master programs. And we have lots of shared professional learning activities. It is called College Network in the west of Norway. I had the pleasure to be the head of the research and professional competence network. And we are we have had a lot of research activity of empowering teacher educators in research, specifically from the small university colleges which didn't have sufficient research competence. And what we've succeeded in doing is that we have landed huge grants from the Norwegian Research Council because I think we are working together. And then the last one, one voice in dialogue with policymakers. That led to the establishment of NAFOL, which is the Norwegian Research School, a doctoral school in teacher education. And it's a national one, and it has been so famous that it has even been quoted in the EU report of 2013 as a successful enterprise. And how did it come about, and what is it? It is a partnership between 7 Norwegian universities and 16 university colleges. And we are in there with the risks, and we are in there with the commitments together. And this started off because of this. There was a heavy criticism, 2004, 2005, of the quality of teacher education in Norway, specifically at the research in teacher education. We wanted to move away from the seminar tradition, specifically primary school teacher education takes place at university colleges, and a lot of that had a seminar tradition. We wanted to develop teacher education into a more research-informed teacher educator, but with a very close link to practice, and to increase the number of doctoral graduates in teacher education, and to avoid a brain drain from teacher education. What do I mean by that? Because many teacher educators who engaged in a PhD program, they did it in their disciplines. And then they went to the disciplines when they completed their PhD. So we had a kind of brain drain here. And then the deans of teacher educators, they have a council meeting quite often during the year, and there the idea came up that maybe we should go together to have a national doctoral school in teacher education. The idea was formed there. It was presented orally, informally, to the Ministry of Education, and they said yes. And they gave an assignment to the Research Council to work out a call for applications to all the higher education institutions in Norway. So then we started that, do you want to join up with me? And we will apply, and do you want to join up with me? And we want to apply, etc., etc. And I remember all the deans we were had a study trip to Scotland, to Glasgow. And it was after the dinner, and we were sitting in a bar, in a bar in Glasgow. And I remember I said, everybody wanted to join up without us. And I said, we are not going to get what we want if we are not uniting. All of us, as many as possible. We don't have all the two or three institutions not involved. But all the rest has said, yes, we will. So there went in one big application with 23 institutions into the Norwegian Research Council. It couldn't be overlooked, and we got it. So that was a real partnership. And how does it work? It works in a way, I'll talk more about it tomorrow, but that means that each institution is committed to send a certain number of PhD students to this research school, and we are working in cohorts. But it has been very successful. I'll talk more about that tomorrow. So that was partnerships with other institutions. Then I'm moving into... Is anybody timing me?
You're halfway.
I'm halfway, good. That's okay. Thank you, Marco. Moving into international teacher educators institution, it is a small world. And it's becoming smaller and smaller and smaller. I don't think any country or any teacher education can just work isolated from the world. We can't do that anymore. So we can have lots of friends and acquaintances, etc., etc. I'm a very good friend with Marco, but I'm not his partner. Okay? But so we can have very good acquaintances, but it's not the same as partners. To what extent do we move into partnerships with our international partners? That's the question. Again, we can have staff exchange. Many of you probably have positions abroad as well. I also have a part of a professorship at the University of Iceland as a guest professor and have responsibilities of doing some PhD supervision, working with their mentor education there, etc. Students exchange, that is more and more common, and I think that is part of it. Joint degrees, you can also start now seeing that this is developing throughout the world. Joint degrees. We have this, TEFE, and we have other international associations. They have their events. We have international research projects. And we have international networks pursuing the same goal. I would like to exemplify this by two examples. One example is like probably many of you, but it's an international research project on attrition from teaching. Many countries in the world, worldwide, they suffer from a heavy load of attrition from teaching. And I'm not talking only about turnover, where they're moving to another school. I'm talking about really attrition from teaching. Some of it is healthy attrition. That means they better not be teachers for the best of our students. But, unfortunately, we have a heavy attrition from by good teachers who are disillusioned by the profession. We have, and we don't have much money yet, but we are 9 countries, from Canada to the US to Australia, to countries, to Israel, and to countries in Europe, where we are working together on how to find out why teachers leave. We are not focusing on novice teachers. We are focusing more on mid-career teachers, those who are also leaving at a very high rate. What we are doing and why are we partners in this thing? Because we haven't got any big funding yet. But each of us in these countries, we succeed in getting a bit of funding internally and nationally for these projects. And we spend the money by meeting together, all of us. Do you understand? So if the Australians got, okay, we can fund your hotel and a meeting in Australia, okay? If I get something in Norway, and which I just did know from the university, then what I will do is that I will fund some of our partners to the ISET conference in New Zealand, etc., etc. So that means we are spending each other's money in order to continue with the project, developing an application for a bigger funding. But we have to meet, we have to be partners to do that. So that is one example of it. Then you have the last one, which is the international networks pursuing the same goal. And here I'm back again to InfoTED, the International Forum for Teacher Educator Development. What is it? It is an international forum with representatives from these countries. And we also started off only with a shared interest. We felt that teacher education is a profession which is not being sufficiently addressed by policymakers or in research. That means we are, in a way, the forgotten profession. What does it mean to be a teacher educator, and what kind of education do you need to become a teacher educator? So the general aims of InfoTED are to try to develop and implement a knowledge base of teacher educators and to translate that into professional, international professional development program for teacher educators. So we want to do that across borders. To develop and implement supportive guidelines for induction. How was your induction into teacher education? Were you inducted? Did you go through any kind of induction? Here in Scotland, you had a wonderful program on induction for teachers. What about that for teacher educators? And to explore how an enduring international supportive structure can be implemented for professional development activities for educators. We have none funded. We have a mutual goal. We decided to become partners. And we fund ourselves. That means more or less from our salaries. But you will hear tomorrow, we have had a lot of meetings around in the various places. Amanda Berry, she is one of them. And we are really partners in everything. In everything. What do I mean by everything? We have written together an Erasmus Plus application now to try to get some funding. And we really work as partners writing it. We have had position paper just submitted, and we have worked on it together, all of us. We have had two other papers just submitted, or book chapters. So we are really working as partners doing this. Without any funding, without just we share the same goal, we want to create an international forum for teacher educators development for ourselves. And we have become partners across, and it's the interest of us, ours, which has done it. So there's no power or anything. We take all the risks, and we take all the success that we hope will come. However, our main partners are our schools. I think the teaching profession, the practice field. We share an overall aim, and our overall aim here is to have a better school for our children. The practice field and we share the responsibilities for educating teachers. We have a shared responsibility. Practice and theory are intertwined in teaching. Practice is maybe more explicit in schools, theory at university, but for you, it all goes into the same belly, and you all have to explicitly show that you master both when you are teaching. We have complementary expertise. However, I think not always sufficient respect for each other's perspective. We can't do teacher education without it, but we respect each other. And here I'd like to show what I mean by teacher education. And here I've taken the IRIS model, where they are talking in Ireland about the three I's. Initial induction in service. I don't know if they have copied it from Scotland, that I don't know. But I know you have it in Ireland. I've added the pre-initial. And what do I mean is that teacher education is a career-long education. But within these phases that you have here, then you have different main providers, but we are partners throughout the whole thing. We can't do without each other. So, in the pre-initial, the choice of education. The choice of education could be that the University of Dundee is so famous for its good teacher education program, and that is one of the reasons why they came there. However, the choice of education could also be that you had a mother or father, uncle or whatever, who was a teacher, and that's the reason why you want to become a teacher. Or you had the teacher in school, and you would like to become like this person and do something. But it's both at university and it's the practice field. Here, initial teacher education, it's the university and the practice field. They're getting the theory here, but they have to do their practice teaching, and it's there. Maybe some UK, English, not UK, English members of the audience would say that it's different, that you're mainly in the practice field and you're very little at the university. I'm aware of that. Then you have the induction, when you're qualifying as professional, that you, first of all, you have to qualify where in the profession where you are. So that's the practice field. But I think that university can be of a help. And in one of the places where I worked, then during the induction, the students came in once a week to the university without the school mentors in order to discuss their experiences as a teacher for that week, just sharing and caring and get feedback, etc., on what they were doing, because they felt they needed the university and not only the school. They were not ready yet to give up. And then in service, after the induction, the practice field and the university. So we are partners, either we like it or not, we are partners throughout a teacher's career. And can we do that well? And can we do that well enough? Why is practice important? Okay, I think that there are not many things we can say there's consensus about in the research. But I think that much of the profession is learned by acting or practicing the profession. And then the question is then who are the teacher educators? Who are the teacher educators? I think all of these are teacher educators in a way. You have the subject experts at the universities. If you're going to teach mathematics, you have to learn mathematics from somebody who knows mathematics. You have the methodologists or the pedagogues in Scandinavia, that specifically in Norway, that differentiation is very clear. You have those who are teaching the didactics of teaching the profession, and you have those who are teaching the general education courses, the pedagogy. They do not always talk very well to each other. Peer students, I think, are teacher educators. The group, the cohort they are working with. You have a school, so these are the university teacher educators. And then you have a school teacher educators, school-based teacher educators, who will come here. And even the pupils, the students in the classes where they are doing their practice teaching, they are certainly also teacher educators. So we are partners, because we are teacher educators from schools and from the universities. However, these teacher educators, school-based and university-based, they have different expertise. And this is Jean Murray and Mail. They developed the concept first-order expertise and second-order expertise. And she very much linked this to the English situation context when she talked about that many teacher educators, their first order expertise is teaching, because they are brought into teacher education from teaching, from being good teachers, okay, or being teachers, good or not. But that is also the way I became a teacher educator. I was pulled in from the school, okay? Second order expertise then would be the academic work, for example, research. That would be their second order expertise, but they are required to do both. But in some countries, you have a different situation. You have teacher educators whose first order expertise is research. And they have never been teachers in schools, but they have a PhD in a specific subject, and they're teaching in teacher education. Their second order expertise is teaching. So that means that I think that all of us, we come in with different first order and second order expertise. So it could be the practice, the teaching, it could be the theory. However, again, we share the same goal, and that educating new teachers. That's the same goal. So we are together. We are in on this together. We have shared responsibilities. So here I'm just going to give you an example with a partnership program with schools. We established at the University of Bergen. And I'm not in charge of that anymore. But it worked out well. We had started off in 2007, 2008... with about 12 partner schools, and each school had to apply to become a partner school. That means we differentiated between partner schools and practice schools. Okay? We made a clear distinction there. So they had to apply, and according to certain criteria, to become a partner school. They were practice school for our students, but they were committed to accept a certain number of students ahead of time. So that means as partners, our partner schools, they committed themselves that we will accept so-and-so many students for every practice period. And that made it easier for us because those of you who have been involved with this, looking for schools to find to place your students is not a very easy thing. The school is committed to provide time for mentor education. And we provided free mentor education at the university of 30 ECTS. But the school principal who signed the contract had to commit him or herself that they will provide for teachers to be mentors and to attend mentor education, a two-year program, a full day every month. But that would be the school's commitment to do that. And then we had a lot of joint research and development project. But we didn't want them to think they have become a partner school and that's it. Now it's a contract for 3 years and then they have to renew it. So now we are already into the third round of contracts with partner schools, and we are changing the criteria, and we don't have the same partner schools all the time. That means some continue, they've been very good, but those who didn't commit themselves and didn't do it good enough, well enough, no. And those who were unhappy with us said, no, it was more work than we benefited. We don't want to be a partner school anymore. Okay? And lots of professional learning seminars, and I'd like just to discuss this, because we jointly, the coordinators from the school and representatives from the university, we planned seminars every month, but we went to the schools. So each school hosted a seminar for all the partner schools, and then we decide on the content together. very often made sure that the content was input from the practice field and input from the university. And then the carrot was that once a year we took a week because we got money from university for this. So we could invite them to a hotel seminar where we had international speakers, we had a lot of socializing, and that happened. And we even, when we had to finish the money towards the end of one of the periods, we invited the school principals and the mentors, three mentors from each school, of the partner school, to for the study trip to Scotland. So that we also got. But when they saw the program, then they said, Carly, this is not the way we used to have study trips, because I really kept them busy. They had 1 hour of shopping. I think that was But it was good. So that is the way of creating partnerships with schools. The mentoring. I think that when we are talking about mentoring students and mentoring novice teachers, we have to educate mentors. And that is one of the main criticisms I have of your wonderful induction program. You never did anything with the mentors, did you, in Scotland? Did you have mentor education? 10 minutes, fine, good. Do you have mentor education here for your mentors? Some have and some have not. Okay. Because that is something that Norwegian government has developed very well. That means we are free to develop the structure of it, the universities and the university colleges, but they have been funding it. They have been funding mentor education. I think in over every teacher education institution will have mentor education. We have been working a bit on trying to understand what kind of knowledge do mentors need. And we have found that it's, first of all, structural, practical knowledge. What do I mean by that? Educational system, organization, the school, etc., etc. They have to have theoretical knowledge of learning theories, adult learning, professional development, the learning of children, of assessment. They have a lot of theoretical knowledge they have to know, the mentors. And they have to have what I call a high level of interpersonal knowledge and skills. I call mentoring a profession within a profession. Because you are doing something else as a mentor than you are doing when you are teaching children. It is, in fact, a profession within a profession. And the mentors are those who are going to bridge the practice between practice and theory. They are one of the main actors in making this bridge. And you have lots of bridges in Scotland, also here in Dundee. This is the bridge to the island where I live. Okay, I live two bridges. Okay, I live here, and that I live here. Okay, so I live in an high. So I have to cross two bridges. And why do I call this bridges? This is mainland Bergen. It's on this side. Why do I say it? Because usually when I'm crossing the bridge, having been a teacher for 20 years before I moved into teacher education, etc., etc., then I feel very much at home on my island in the practice field, very much at home. But as a teacher educator, as a researcher with my PhD and with a professorship and publication and so on, I also feel pretty much at home on the mainland Bergen, okay? So I cross this bridge very easily without even thinking of it. I want our students to do the same. And I think the means to do that will be to have school-based teacher educators who are capable of helping them in developing the model that I talked about in the beginning, together with us at the university. But sometimes this might be very rough. And here, even though here it doesn't look, but it is pretty high here. You can see big shape, ships are going under, much bigger than this one as well. And on a stormy day, the waves are high, several meters. And the wind up here is rather tough. And I have a little small Toyota Aygo. So I feel, should I stay on my island today? Will they close the bridge? Is there no bridge between practice and theory, etc., etc.? So there will always be our main things, practice or theory. However, we have to help our students and we ourselves to be capable of crossing this. We have to take our primary expertise and get a strong secondary expertise and vice versa. That is the crossing, which I think is important. The content of mental education that we have are here. First of all, the pedagogy. We discussed the pedagogical value of mentoring. Theories and research of teachers' professional learning. School and university as community of learning. So these are the topics that we deal with in mentor education. 2-year program. We have them for 8 hours once a month. And at the end of the 2 years, their exam is an action research project on their own mentoring. Because we think that action research then is a combination of the practice and the theory. Okay, so that is their final exam in it. That we do with our partner schools. And then I know there's going to be a session on university schools, but what we have started in Norway developing, that's the concept of university schools, taken from the theory of what we have, university hospitals. And these university schools, they are less than our partner schools. At University of Bergen, for the time being, you have one. At University of Trondheim, we have just decided on 2. University of Tromsø has 6. And you in Oslo, you have more.
Just expanded to 20.
You have expanded. Yeah, yeah. So you have made it maybe more into a partner school scheme. I don't know. But here the partners are 3. The university, the schools, and the municipality. So we have 3 partners here within it. The municipality is very heavily involved financially. And in Trondheim, for example, they selected the schools. Lots of schools applied together with us, but the final word here was the municipality, because these are schools that they want to push. Okay? The aim is to strengthen the practice component in teacher education, to have practice-oriented research and development projects, to empower teacher educators in both places, to improve the school, their school development, and to let the schools take their knowledge and experiences to talk to other schools. So that is part of the responsibilities that the university school will have. How do they do that? We are planning to work, now I'm involved with this in Trondheim, all the time within the proximity of theory and practice, education and practice, education and research intertwined. So these are the proximities that we will be working on. And that means there will be shared positions. Teacher educators will have positions in schools, and school teachers will have positions at the universities. So here we really share the positions. Striving for excellence, and the main thing we are talking about here is that the university schools should become educational lighthouses. It is a very new idea. Tromsø is the one university with most experience, Oslo second, and now Bergen and Trondheim are adding to it. It's exciting, it's new. I can't say how successful it is. We have huge intention, and these are really partners with us. Then I want to end up with the society. I think we have an implicit partnership with a society. This is not expressed. It can't be formed in a contract, but it's there. Education is simply the soul of a society as it passes from one generation to another. If the passport to the future for tomorrow belongs to those who prepare for it today. And that is the partnership that I want to make a bit more explicit here at the end. Thank you. Our students will function in a world 60 to 80 years from now. Students in school. And that world is completely unknown to us. Did my grandmother know? And will my grandchildren, I don't have any, but probably, hopefully they're coming. Did my grandmother know, and will my grandchildren know, what these gadgets are used for? Think of my grandmother, even my mother. And that the world, I can talk to the whole world whenever I want. It was unbelievable. 50 years ago, 40 years ago, 30 years ago, not 80. So teacher education needs to prepare teachers who teach for the future. Not for today, but for the future. By encouraging creativity, stressing informed improvisation in teaching, and teaching about learning how to learn. And the last one is the most important thing we can provide our students with, how to develop learning, how to learn skills. And that is more important than more mathematics or more English or more science or more history. I don't say we don't need it, but that is not the most important. So just to conclude, education involves multiple agents. We have the same goal, but we have a fragmented structure. Partnerships with other agents strengthen education. Education for the future, it's a huge challenge. We can't do it alone. But it will come. That is the society, and that is the implicit partnership with society. We need to plan and work together.